Blog Talk Radio.
Weekend? I ask that as if it's possible for you to respond. As if I can hear you. And I'm like, oh, really? That's good. That's good. So did you go to the store? So, a lot of stuff to discuss today. Got a little bit of net neutrality news later on. We have an amazing story that gives some numbers behind just how much Donald Trump is crushing his own base. We have a terrible, terrible, terrible terror attack in Somalia that we have to discuss. I mean, the numbers out of this one are, I don't know if I've ever seen anything as bad. And just general instability regarding what's going on in our government. Corporate Democrats are flying the pirate flag, so we're going to be all over the map today. Sit back, relax, buckle up. Here we go. It's going to be a bumpy one. We're going to start with General McMaster, and what he ends up having to do for Donald Trump. General McMaster is a top Trump national security advisor, and he went on Fox News where he proceeded to defend the indefensible.
This tweet by President Trump instantly became one of his most memorable. It was posted just after 11 p.m. on the night of September 23rd, and it read, and I quote, "Just heard Foreign Minister of North Korea speak at UN. If he echoes thoughts of Little Rocket Man, they won't be around much longer." General, did you receive advance warning that that tweet was going to go out?
Well, the president doesn't have to clear anything with me, but what the president's tweet is very consistent with his policy. I think what's important to understand with both the Iran policy and with the North Korea policy, the president gave us very clear guidance at the outset. We delivered, as the national security team, multiple options to the president, had broad-ranging discussions. The president has made decisions on very coherent, well laid out strategies, and that's what we're executing now.
I want to ask about the tweet, though. Do you and the president proceed from a shared view that the public denigration of another head of state, an attempt at publicly humiliating an adversary on the world stage with a derisive term like Little Rocket Man, that can have some positive strategic impact?
I think what the real danger is in terms of communicating with Kim Jong-un is that if he doesn't understand how serious we are about his behavior and the behavior of the regime. And the president's been very clear on that, and I think that it's beneficial to the safety and security of not only the United States, but our great allies in South Korea and Japan and the world.
These guys are so full of shit, it's incredible. I mean, what he just did is like the definition of putting lipstick on a pig. You got the idiot temper tantrum president shooting from the hip and saying dumb things that threaten war, clearly. And he's like, yeah, you know, I think this is consistent with the message that we've been trying to get through the administration, and we want to show them that we're serious. And, like, what are you, the idiot whisperer? That's what he's doing. He's like, oh no, don't worry, this is fine. This is fine. Everything's going exactly according to plan, and this is all totally calculated. And I don't want anybody to worry. Like, what the fuck is this, man? And then I think the most important point is he keeps stressing, like, oh, you know, the regime has to know their actions are out of line. But what the fuck is Trump? What is Trump? You know, I've mentioned this piece like 5 or 6 times on the show, but I keep mentioning it because I think it's a really powerful piece. But Adam Johnson of FAIR wrote about how it doesn't matter what the U.S. says or does, everything is portrayed in corporate media and spun as, at worst, oh, the U.S. is like stumbling into war with North Korea. You know, like, oh, it's just a slow slide into war. We might, whoops, wake up one day and find out, wow, we're at war with North Korea. As opposed to, if you objectively analyze the actions of any other nation, one would say, hey, it looks like you're the aggressor. It looks like you're the one who's going on offense. I mean, he literally threatens war on Twitter on a weekly basis. Sometimes he goes as far as to threaten what sounds like genocide. We will rain fire and fury down on North Korea. Fire and fury. So if any other nation did that when that nation had the biggest military in human history and a track record of offensive wars, and the other nation has a military budget of 37 cents and a Pop-Tart, how can anybody look at that and go, yeah, it appears like you know, Kim Jong-un is the one who's going to launch an offensive strike? No, it looks like the U.S. is, that's exactly the debate that's going on behind the scenes. I wouldn't be surprised if there was only one or two people in the administration at best, who are just holding Donald Trump back from launching an attack on North Korea. I would not be surprised about that because he doesn't understand the consequences of his actions. He doesn't get it. Like, oh, if you launch on North Korea, they launch on South Korea, hundreds of thousands of people dead, maybe millions of people dead. That's not really an option. That's not really on the table to do this. But I don't think it I don't think he gets it. And even if he got it, I don't think he cares. He's, we're going to have success. He was tweeting about how what the last administrations did, it didn't work. Clinton, Bush, Obama did not work. There's only one option left. That's what Trump was saying. That is a clear threat of war, that we are going to attack you. Not, hey, maybe you're about to attack us and then we'll respond in self-defense. No, that is, we are going to attack you. And also to Trump, like, what does that mean? Oh, it didn't work. What didn't work? To me, failure on the issue of North Korea is if you do a fucking war with them. He's just saying, no, the fact that there's still, you know, a regime there that we don't agree with, that we don't like, that's doing horrible things, and that's not beholden to U.S. power, you know, that's a failure. Well, what a 180 from the campaign trail when half the time he spoke about how non-intervention is the way to go and how we're not supposed to get involved in all these other countries. So, man, it's just so fucking creepy to see somebody who's supposed to be, I'm a very serious person. I'm a general, General McMaster. Look at my bald head and the way I'm talking. I'm so serious. I'm an expert in all these complex matters that are above your head if you're a regular citizen. And yes, let me tell you about how the president's tweet referencing Little Rocket Man is part of our strategy. And it's totally fine, and there's nothing wrong with it. Dude, you know damn well it's not fine. You know damn well we're on the brink of war. You know damn well Trump wants a war. You know damn well he's the one that wants to go on the offense. And your ass is out there talking about how they need to understand that their actions are not permissible. What about our actions? What about Trump? Is what Trump's doing permissible? Hell no, it's not permissible. And I just can't get over the hypocrisy of a nation where, listen, since look at what we did in Iraq. Like, that just happened. It just fucking happened. We're still in Iraq. We offensively invaded a country that didn't attack us, destroyed it. ISIS rose out of the ruins. We're still over there. We're still in Afghanistan. We're bombing 7 different countries. We still have Guantanamo Bay open. We still torture. No habeas corpus. No due process. And then we're going to talk about how these actions are not permissible. What the fuck? What about our actions? How about that? What about our actions? Are they permissible? No, of course it's permissible, because when we do it, it is by definition defensive. And at worst case scenario, like Adam Johnson says, oh, we're just stumbling into war. It's not that our maniac president is purposefully escalating to try to get a war and that he's going on offense. No. It's that we're stumbling backwards. I mean, it just happens sometimes. And here, we'll send out an official-looking jack-off, like General McMaster, to say, oh, well, this is totally fine. It's part of the plan. No, that's exactly right. He's putting them on notice. That's what he's doing. World affairs are being conducted like a WWE event. Where you got Trump's out there, little rocket man, what, do you have bombs and missiles? What, are you going to shoot North Korea? Well, maybe we should do regime change. Maybe we should do that. And Trump's manager goes out there and puts a good face on it. My client is very serious, and he wants you to know that your actions are unacceptable. We joke about it, but these are scary times. These are scary times. We really are on the brink of war with North Korea. So this is no laughing matter. And the administration should stop covering up for the man baby. Okay. Now, we move on to Jerry Falwell Jr. Jerry Falwell Jr. is one of Trump's biggest bootlickers. He's the head of Liberty University, which is a fake school because it's ultra-fundamentalist. So he went on Fox News to praise his daddy.
Even though the GOP has the majority in Congress, many people believe there are some Republicans who are just obstructing the president's agenda.
And our next guest, well, he told the president he needs to coin a new term for them, fake Republicans. I want to make sure I got that right.
Joining us now, Liberty University President Jerry Falwell Jr. joins us live. Thank you very much for being here, sir. So you've coined a new phrase. You think the president should use it? Fake Republicans. What do you mean by that, sir?
Well, I think there's several Republicans in the Senate who pretended to be conservative Republicans to deceive their base, to deceive their voters, got elected, and they really don't share the same values. And I think if they will get out of the way and honor the values that they ran on, keep the promises that they made to their constituencies when they ran, I think Donald Trump has the potential to be the greatest president since Abraham Lincoln.
How can he?
What? Please stop. You know, there's a weird kinship between Jerry Falwell Jr. and Donald Trump because, for those of you who don't know, Trump's dad was really rich, worth like $400 million. Now, Trump likes to lie and say he got a small loan. I got a small loan of $1 million. To do my first business venture from my daddy, $1 million. But that's really a lie because he's not talking about when his dad passed away and millions of dollars was passed on to him. So it's really misleading. It's like a small loan of $1 million was given to me. So Donald Trump is a spoiled little brat. In a way, he's kind of like a Paris Hilton-ish character. And, you know, this is no surprise to people who are actually educated on this issue and who aren't duped by his facade and his show and his veneer. I mean, the guy went bankrupt 6 times. So he's not the smartest guy. It appears pretty obvious at face value, again, to people who are willing to critically analyze, that he has a low IQ. I mean, he speaks in fucking sentence fragments. He can't even get through a full sentence. It's like, here's a fragment, cut it off. Here's another fragment, cut it off, because his mind can't follow a fucking path. So Jerry Falwell loves this guy because this is Jerry Falwell Jr. Jerry Falwell Sr. is the one who is the big Christian fundamentalist who had a big name, who was married to right-wing causes and made his name that way. So now Jerry Falwell Jr.'s remaining here, and he's like, you know, in the shadow of his daddy. And so he feels this kinship with Donald Trump, who's also a spoiled brat. The spoiled brat and the spoiled brat love each other. So you see them bolster each other nonstop. But look at his argument here. Yeah, fake Republicans. And I love how they think they're coining these terms. Like Trump said in an interview recently with Mike Huckabee. He's like, yeah, fake, you know, fake is one of those terms that I've come up with and people say it's a tremendous term when I say fake news. What? You were the first one that said fake news, buddy. I mean, you said it a lot and it caught on a lot more after you did it. But you were the first one to say it. In fact, it was first used to describe news that you guys pushed it was fake. So now you're taking full credit for fake news. Like, this guy's like, I call it fake Republicans. Yeah, RINO has been a thing for a long time, which stands for Republican in name only. And so, like, what the fuck is with the credit? Again, it probably has something to do with the daddy issues. It's like, you know, their dad got all the praise and the love. So they're like, no, I count too. Fake Republicans is my term. I just came up with fake Republicans. Yeah, Trump should say that. And his argument is, hey, they're not right-wing enough. The Republicans aren't right-wing enough. What the fuck does that even mean? How do you believe that? And then what you'll notice with these guys is, and you can go watch the whole interview, they very rarely have anything to say about policy. You know, to the extent they actually believe in anything, they just believe in, like, Fox News talking points or Rush Limbaugh talking points, where they're like, you know, you should, like, repeal Obamacare. Okay, but what do you put in its place? Well, you just repeal Obamacare, then our healthcare system will be tremendous. He goes on to talk about the NFL and shit and disrespecting our troops. Yeah, that's what they're doing. It's like, ugh, do you think about anything, or are you just, do you literally download all the information into your head when you watch Fox News or listen to Rush Limbaugh and just regurgitate it without a single thought going through your mind? But could you imagine believing that? Well, they're fake Republicans. They're not right-wing enough. Yeah, that's the problem. And then he goes on to make a point that should have everybody's jaw on the fucking ground. He apparently really believes, hey, Trump could be the best president since Abe Lincoln. What the fuck has Trump done? What has he done? Go ahead, name the major legislation he's done. Even in legislation I would disagree with that you agree with. What is it? Crickets, I don't hear shit. You know what he's done, right? Countless executive orders. By the way, as he ripped the Obama administration for executive orders. And his argument wasn't just, hey, I disagree with the substance of Obama's executive orders. His argument was, executive orders are dictatorial and should not happen, full stop. Oh, shit, now I'm president and I can't get anything through Congress? Quick, where's my pen? I'm going to sign some executive orders. And the executive orders are all preposterous. I mean, one allows coal companies to pollute the waterways more. The fuck are you doing? Another one is a goofy-ass executive order that says, for every one new regulation, we need to get rid of two. Again, governing through Fox News and Rush Limbaugh talking points. That's exactly what this is. Just signed another executive order, this one to obliterate Obamacare and draw a stake through its heart, because they say, hey, now the rules and regulations don't apply because you can create your own group to negotiate with the private health insurance company. But guess what? Now there's no protection for pre-existing conditions if you go about it that way. A million more people are going to be uninsured, according to the CBO, because of his new executive orders. Another one, gut subsidies for poor people. I mean, its premiums are supposed to spike by 20%. So this is the shit that he's doing. He's fucking raising hell. He gratuitously dropped the mother of all bombs on Afghanistan. Just randomly. Hey, let's drop our biggest non-nuclear weapon and see what happens. He's escalating to war with North Korea. And you're out there talking about he's the best president since Lincoln. Now, look, I get it, and, you know, I would venture to guess that most people in my audience would agree with me that it is a fucking cadre of lesser of evilism if you look at all the presidents. You know, so I get it that most of them suck, if not all of them. But at least when you talk about relative accomplishments, dude, FDR did the New Deal. On that alone, Trump just gets his ass handed to him. LBJ did the war on poverty. Okay, what the fuck does Trump have in his name? What does he have? He's got nothing. And, of course, I would argue that whatever he has accomplished are things that are draconian and backwards and terrible. I mean, getting out of the Paris Climate Agreement, That will go down as just one of the dumbest, most terrible acts in U.S. history, not taking climate change seriously, getting out of the Iran deal. And I don't know if they're really stupid enough to believe it, but they might be stupid enough to think, like, no, now Iran is not going to get a nuke, where before they would. No, you idiots, the deal makes clear that Iran was not going to get a nuke when you have the deal. When you get out of the deal, it's much more likely they do get a nuke. Because when the deal's in place, they have the IAEA go in there and inspect their nuclear sites. They're only allowed to enrich to a certain point, and that certain point is for research and for power for their power grid. They can enrich to get a nuclear weapon, and in return, all we have to do is lift sanctions and give them back their own money. It was an awesome deal. It was a great deal. They're pulling out of it. It's so fucking sad, man. He has no accomplishments, none whatsoever, and everything he has done is sending us down the wrong path. So leave it to guys like this to make points like that, and then he can't even tell you what he believes. Hey, what's your ideal policy for healthcare? Get out of Obamacare. Okay, I get it. You don't like Obamacare, but what's your ideal? Free market? Well, Obamacare kept in place the free market. You don't know that? You don't understand that? That it makes it so you have to go to private health insurance companies to get insurance? You should love that system. That's the old Newt Gingrich plan and Chuck Grassley plan and Mitt Romney plan and fucking Richard Nixon plan. You don't like that? You just said you want free market. But if the freer market is what I want, these guys can't tell you what they want because they don't know what they want because they don't view politics through the realm of policy. They view it as a team game, and they're standard tribalists. I'm on Trump's team. I'm on the Republican team. You on the Democrats' team? He's just not smart. He's just not smart, and he had everything handed to him from his daddy, and it's clear. Okay. All right, let's talk about what happened in Somalia. There was a horrific, horrific terror attack in Somalia yesterday. I want to show you this short clip that has some of the gut-wrenching images from it. Here's your fair warning. This is graphic.
When the truck arrived at the busy intersection known locally as K5, there was a traffic jam. Dozens of motorists stuck in their cars, hundreds of bystanders too. And so the explosion caused carnage.
This was the biggest explosion I have ever heard. The car exploded at the center of the busiest junction in Mogadishu. It caused huge destruction. I saw more than 20 dead people around the streets, and there may be more than that in the collapsed buildings.
I've never seen a scene like this ever before. All the buildings around here have collapsed. There were close to 200 people in these buildings. I hope everyone is okay. K5 is in a bustling commercial district of Mogadishu with many shops, hotels and businesses. The blast happened outside the Safari Hotel, not normally used by government workers, and so it's not clear whether the hotel itself was the intended target, or possibly the Somali Foreign Ministry nearby. It's emerged, too, that the police were actually following the truck at the time of the explosion. About 2 hours after the truck bomb blast, a car bomb detonated in the city's Medina district. Two people were killed there and the driver arrested. The group Al-Shabaab frequently launches gun, grenade or bomb attacks in Mogadishu, despite being forced from the capital 6 years ago by African Union and Somali troops. The ongoing threat is a constant worry for many Somalis. Paul Brennan, Al Jazeera.
Okay, so that clip actually didn't have as many graphic images. I confused it with a different one I saw that had probably a whole thing was graphic images, which is maybe why I didn't show it, because it was just nonstop. It was horrendous, but you get a good sense of what happened there. Guys, the death tally, at least the last time I saw, because it's been going up and up and up and up seemingly every hour, but the last time I saw was about 280 people who were killed. 280 people. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if that number goes over 300, because there's now there's another 200 and some odd who are injured. So this bomb was a gigantic bomb in the middle of a very busy street, and it was designed to do maximum damage. And, you know, you heard them reference it there that Al-Shabaab is, you know, likely responsible. They're one of the worst of the worst. There, you know, you have Al-Shabaab, you have Boko Haram, you have ISIS, obviously Al-Qaeda. These are just, those are various jihadist groups. Al-Shabaab is more located in Somalia. They've done horrific terror attacks, you know, over the past few years, maybe decade. And they've just been a scourge in Somalia. And think, I mean, like, what the fuck? Why would you do that? Why would you, what do you think, what the fuck, what are you getting out of it, you know? We'll kill all these people and then establish the caliphate? What? Everybody's, you know, in solidarity with people in Somalia now. Everybody's going, wow. That was one of the most atrocious acts of evil we've ever fucking seen. And that's not going to advance your cause unless you're doing it just for the sake of doing it. You know, and I don't know if in their mind they think we're just killing the infidels here or whatever. We're doing something wrong to people who did something wrong to us, but those people didn't do anything wrong to you. They're fucking random people working, going about their business, going about their daily lives. I mean, that's as evil as it gets. And again, those numbers, I don't know if I've ever seen those numbers before. 9/11, of course, rivals it. But outside of that, like, what the? And unfortunately, the media, they're not covering it that much, which is a damn shame. And, you know, anytime there's an attack in Europe or the U.S., there's the je suis, you know, Paris or whatever, fill in the blank with the place that got attacked. There's very little of that. For Somalia, but this is not normal. That is not, you know, something is just, well, whoops, I guess that happened, and that's a thing that happens. No, this is a big fucking deal, man. I mean, that death count, that injury count is absolutely ridiculous. And at least to this point, you know, I haven't seen Trump tweet about it. I haven't seen much on it outside of, you know, I had to get that little clip from Al Jazeera. I think there was another one from BBC. There's just not as much about it, but it is absolutely horrendous. And for those of you, you know, who don't know the situation with Somalia in regards to what we're doing, we're already there. So some people's reaction might be, well, come on, now we got to go get them. Like, let's go get Al-Shabaab. Yeah, we're already there. We're in Somalia. And we've been drone striking in Somalia for a while now. They're on the list of the 7 countries where we're doing some sort of military intervention. Obviously, some of the countries we're still doing a full-scale war, like Iraq and Afghanistan. Some countries it's more of traditional airstrikes with fighter jets, and then other countries it's a drone fest. And you know, we are doing drone strikes in Somalia. In fact, Trump recently got rid of the rules of engagement, loosened the rules of engagement for our drone strikes in Somalia. So that means, you know, they say, hey, we're going to go after more targets and we're going to have fewer rules and that'll fix everything. Well, it turns out it didn't. You got rid of your drone strike rules and you loosened the rules of engagement, and it's not like, well, magically now we were able to stop everything that negative that was about to happen. No, that's a tremendous, gigantic, preposterous terror attack. So, you know, look, I don't know what the solution is other than to stand in solidarity with the Somalian government if they want some humanitarian aid. I mean, but I don't know what the answer is. Nobody knows what the answer is. Anybody who tells you they know what the answer is, they don't know what the answer is. You know, we've been waging a war on ISIS, and we've been waging a war on terror since 2001. ISIS didn't exist in 2001, to be fair. That was against Al-Qaeda. But we've been waging a war on terror, starting with the war in Afghanistan in 2001, war in Iraq in 2003. We've been fighting ever since. but there's still been a giant proliferation of jihadism. There's more terrorists now than there were when we started. So empirically speaking, our war on terror has not worked. You have the thought virus, the brain virus of jihadism spreads just from the internet, for example. You know, people can get radicalized by reading various works of people who happen to believe that ideology, and that's one way it spreads. Another way it spreads is because the U.S. takes out so many innocent people that, you know, people who see their aunt die, see their uncle die, see their friend die, turn around and say, well, now I want to fight big bad America. But this is a case where, obviously, America, we have nothing to do with it. These people just have that brain virus of jihadism, and so they attack people in Somalia. It's not like, you know, what, Somalian foreign policy has gone after these people and now there's revenge attacks? No. These are just people who are seemingly brainwashed by jihadism, and they're acting out. And it's evil. That's the only way to describe it. It's evil, it's disgusting, it's grotesque. I don't know what the solution is. I wish I had an easy solution. If you want to wage a war on it, well, we're doing it. There you go. We're doing it. So I guess you could say stay the course if that's what you want to do. But what is needed, obviously, is humanitarian aid and support for people who just had their lives upended and destroyed by such a horrific terror attack. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, corporate Democrats are at it again. Wait until you hear it. And then President Trump is crushing his own base of voters. Wow. All right, stay right there, guys. We will be right back.
the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Son of a bitch. All right, guys, we're back. Here we go. You knew that time was going to come. Here it is. Time to bash the corporate Democrats for being the worst ever and botching their anti-Trump resistance. Paste Magazine is reporting on a story largely missed by the mainstream media. Democrats appoint anti-minimum wage advocate to finance committee. Wow. That is as brazen as it gets. They say Dan Halpern chaired Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed's mayoral campaign in 2009 and served as a trustee for then-President-elect Barack Obama's 2008 inaugural committee. Halpern also is immediate past chairman of the Atlanta Housing Authority Board of Directors and a past chairman of the Georgia Restaurant Association. In a party that says it's trying to be progressive, Halpern is a strange direction. As the head of Jackmont Hospital and the GRA, Halpern has reliably opposed the minimum wage. His record thus far suggests a hostility towards the kind of worker-friendly policies that the Bernie-era Dems are supposedly pursuing. It suggests Perez and Perez's backers and friends have not gotten the memo about economic justice. There's not much I even need to add to this, is there? You know, Tom Perez, you can go out there, and he does, and give all the platitudes and cliches in the world. You can say as many flowery things you want about equality and justice and equal opportunity and all that stuff. But when you take actions like this, people don't give a shit. And they can see through your bullshit from a mile away. Did you know when Bernie did the Unity Tour with Tom Perez would get booed? It would be these events. Tom Perez and Bernie Sanders would be there. Bernie would give a speech. People would go nuts. Tom Perez would come up and start talking. People would boo. See, they say to each other, corporate Democrats, they talk about how, oh, man, these Bernie bros, they're so unfair and, you know, they're not for unity. That's their problem. They're not for unity. And they're not willing to bring together the two different factions, the Hillary Clinton wing and the Bernie Sanders wing, and that's not fair. Blame them for all the problems. But, Tom, there's a giant issue with that. The issue is, it's not true. They're not booing you because they don't like you personally. They're booing you because of your policies. They're booing you because they see through your fucking act. From a mile away, they go, that guy's full of shit. He's full of shit. Why? Because he's not, like when Bernie gives a speech, there's no question as to where he stands. It's not an issue. You know, Bernie goes up there and what we need is a $15 minimum wage. We need Medicare for all. That's what we need. We need to rebuild our infrastructure. We need to move towards green technology. People go, I know exactly what that guy stands for, and I like it. And what does Tom Perez do? Don't take my word for it. You go watch his own speeches. Well, you know, what Democrats need to do is Democrats need to lead with our values. And when we lead with our values and we put hope on the ballot, that's something that ends up working out for us. And we got to show these Republicans that Trump is bad and Trump is wrong and you got to go vote for Democrats and give us a majority. So you speak, and at the end of it, nobody has any idea what you're for. Nobody knows what you're for. We have to lead with our values. What does that mean? We have to know, so what are your values? We have to lead with our values. Well, what does that mean? So what are your values? What does that mean? And I've often made the joke, as you guys all know, especially when I do my Tom Perez impersonation, his whole shtick is, you know, as Democrats, we're for good things and we're against bad things. But what are the good things? What do you mean? I know what Bernie thinks are the good things, and that's why people like him, because they agree with Bernie when he lays out what he thinks are good things, because he's specific. You, on the other hand, you don't say shit. And you don't say shit because you're too busy doing stuff like this. You're playing for a fucking team. My team is the Democrats, and really what I do is I find a way to keep the status quo and business as usual in place, and we're going to keep serving our corporate donors as I pretend to be progressive. But he's not even good at pretending. He's not even good at pretending. Losers. Losers. And look, here's the part of the story that nobody will tell you. These actions by Tom Perez emboldened Donald Trump. They emboldened Trump, and they pushed the American people further into the arms of Republicans. Because listen, here's the way it works in U.S. elections. Anytime Americans vote for Republicans, it's not because they actually agree with Republicans. It's just because they're so sick of the Democrats. So every time a Republican wins, it's not a pro-Republican vote. It's an anti-Democrat vote. That's what that is. Because again, when you look at the beliefs of the American people, they're left-wing, full stop. Their beliefs are left-wing. Again, that's not me speaking, that's the polls. They want to raise the minimum wage. They want to legalize marijuana. They want Medicare for all. They obviously wanted gay marriage. We got gay marriage. But you go down the list. The American people, save maybe one or two issues, are left-wing. So that means the left-wing party should be winning, correct? Well, if the left-wing party doesn't really stand for left-wing goals or ideals, they're not going to win. So you have a fake left-wing party. You have a corporate party. And then what other option do people have? They just go, I don't know, I guess we'll go for these guys. Because at least Trump had the fake populism going on. Whereas Hillary couldn't fake it. Tom Perez can't even fake it. And to be clear, I don't want them to fake it. I want them to actually be populist left. But look, with stuff like this, they're just not going to do it. It's not going to happen. Because they're still totally beholden to their donors. You're going to take 80% of the country wants to raise the minimum wage. 80% of the country. I don't know what the specific number is for Democrats, but I'm going to guess it's over 95% of Democrats who want to raise the minimum wage. And you're going to appoint an anti-minimum wage lobbyist to the Finance Committee for the Democrats. And then you're going to turn around and go, I wonder why we're still raising a record low in terms of money for the DNC. I wonder why. Because people know you're full of shit. And why the fuck would anybody give to your organization when they could give to Justice Democrats? Democrats who are fighting for the things that the Democratic Party should have been fighting for all along. That's all we're doing. Justice Democrats is only fighting to make the Democratic Party what it should have been all along, a party that's unapologetically for ending the wars, a party that's for a living wage and Medicare for all and free college and ending the drug war. And the list goes on and on, regulating Wall Street, raising taxes on the rich. This is just what the Democrats should have been for all along. So that's all we're doing, and we're immensely popular as a result of it, whereas you guys are fucking stagnating. And by the way, we're raising a lot of money, and we're not taking corporate and PAC money. The DNC, of course, is taking corporate and PAC money. So you guys have a flat-out advantage, just a flat-out advantage when it comes to fundraising. And you're still doing a shitty job because of stuff like this. Nobody's going to get duped anymore, asshole. Nobody's getting duped. People know what's going on. People have the availability. That's not the right way to put it. I was going to say people have the availability of information. There's a free flow of information, and people can see it now. They can see what's going on. They can see how the sausage is made, and they don't fucking like it. And that's why people want a new kind of politics. Politics that rejects corporate and PAC money, that's beholden to the people, that pushes for what people actually want. Not politicians who go up there and tell you what you want to hear, and then they say, okay, now let me be the manager here, and let me go cut deals and do whatever's possible within the context of the system that we have and appease corporate donors while every now and then maybe throw a bone to the American people. No. People are done with that shit. And that's exactly what Tom Perez represents. Which is why people despise him, and this is why Bernie's the most liked politician in the United States of America. So step the fuck aside, DNC, because it's our turn. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Let's go get them. Because I don't know about you guys, but I'm sick and tired of seeing stories like this and headlines like this. And the Democrats, emboldening Trump and making it more likely he gets reelected, despite how unpopular he is. Because when your options are Republican light or Republican, it turns out the American people often just pick the Republican. How about we give them more than just the option of Republican light? How about we give them the option of populist left and somebody who's going to actually fight for what they believe in? Okay. President Trump is crushing his own base of voters. This is a sad story. The Hill reports states that voted for President Trump in the 2016 presidential election will be most impacted by his decision to cut off key Obamacare payments, according to an analysis conducted by the Associated Press. The study found that 70% of those who benefit from the subsidies are from states where Trump won. In the 30 states that Trump carried, about 4 million people benefit from the cost-sharing payment, the AP reported. 9 out of the 10 states with the highest percentage of people benefiting from the payments voted for Trump, according to the AP. The White House announced last week that Trump would end key payments to insurers selling Obamacare plans. Oh, man. Wow. Wow. So, the way President Trump framed this on Twitter is he said, you know, the Democrats are defending their pet insurance companies. I will fight them, which is actually a good framing politically, because that's him saying the Democrats are with the insurance companies, I'm against the insurance companies. That's his framing. Now, it turns out the reality in this instance is much more complicated. The reality is if you cut those payments, those subsidies to insurance companies, then people are going to get absolutely obliterated and crushed. Because if you don't have the subsidies, well, then they can't afford their health care, period. They can't afford health insurance, period. So there's a framing for Trump there that makes sense of where I'm against insurance companies, they're for insurance companies. But the reality on the ground, pun intended, trumps that. Because people are going to say, when people lose their health insurance, they're going to go, what the fuck? I thought Trump was going to help me. But it turns out that they're going to lose their health insurance. I mean, the real reaction from the Democrats and what the Democrats should have done from day one, as everybody knows, is when they had a supermajority, they should have gotten Medicare for All. They should have pushed for Medicare for All. Then you wouldn't have had to deal with any of this stuff. You wouldn't have even had the ability of the right wing to frame it as the Democrats are for the insurance companies, we're against the insurance companies. That wouldn't have even been an option if we did Medicare for All. But we didn't do Medicare for All. We did the original right-wing plan. And as a result, now we're in a position where Trump can frame it as, I'm against insurance companies, Democrats are for insurance companies, and that is a politically beneficial framing on his part. But the actual impact of this, you bet your ass, it will crush his own voters. And it's just a matter of, will they or will they not recognize it? And will they or will they not blame the right people? Because Trump, if he's aggressive enough with his framing and say, wasn't me, it was the Democrats, wasn't me, it was the Democrats, wasn't me, it was the Democrats, well, then that could theoretically work. I don't know if it will, but it could. It absolutely could. And but there's no question here. Not only is he doing this, Trump, he's doing it for the specific purpose of hurting the American people. He's doing it to hurt the American people. And then to turn around and go, that's why you need even more Republicans in government, man. That's why you need it. So you want to do a full Obamacare repeal, which will be the only way to stop the pain? Of course, that'll make the pain worse. But he'll say, the only way to do a full Obamacare repeal, blame the Democrats because you're hurting now, and then vote for more Republicans. That's the plan. That's the goal. So this is literally playing politics, kicking people off of their health insurance for political gain, ruining lives for political gain. That's what this is. It doesn't get any fucking worse than this, man. It doesn't get any worse than this. And you heard them say it openly, too. I was kind of amazed by it, even though I shouldn't be, because I'm well aware of what Republican senators and what Republican politicians are capable of. But Lindsey Graham would, like, tweet about it. He'd go, yeah, just let, you know, hey, fuck it. let's undercut Obamacare, let it collapse, blame the Democrats, and then say, now you got to elect more Republicans. So in other words, you take a sledgehammer to Obamacare and in the process ruin the lives of millions of Americans and then say, wasn't enough. Vote for us now to fix the problem. It's like a surgeon swings a sledgehammer at your kneecap and then goes, now you need me. I got to fix your knee. Like, no, you should have just not fucking swung the sledgehammer at the kneecap. This is a radical party, man. This party is so off the fucking spectrum that, as Noam Chomsky points out, they're not even a governing party anymore. What the fuck do they stand for? Nobody even knows what the fuck they stand for. The Democrats have done enough to help insurance companies, you know? Like, they're the party that, yes, is beholden to big pharma and insurance companies and Wall Street. Absolutely. Those industries are not scared of Democrats. But the Republicans, half the time they do these giant giveaways to big pharma. You know, they're the ones who are saying, no, we're not going to do the – it's a handful of corporate Democrats and the Republicans who say, no, we're not going to negotiate for better prices for Medicare. So that's a big giveaway to big pharma. So half the time the Republicans are serving their donors. But then also they're doing stuff like this, which just – it's just petty. It's just like we're against Obama and what he did, so we don't give a fuck who we're going to hurt. We're just going to try to destroy this thing no matter what. So it's a mix of we're going to serve our corporate donors and straight up political nihilism and vengeance. You know, hey, the Democrats always get props for shit they do. Well, how about we tear down everything they do? Yes! Yeah. This is what Trump did with the Paris Climate Agreement, and this is what Trump did with the Iran deal. Do I think Trump's truly an ideologue on some of these issues? No. Maybe on some he's an ideologue and he actually has beliefs that are odious. But most of it, I think he's just a vapid human being and he's just kind of going wherever the winds take him. And what does his gut say? Wreck everything Obama did. You know, hey, trying to do a climate change agreement so that we try to fix everything? Nope. Not on my watch. Trying to do the Iran deal so there's peace and we don't go to war? Nope. Not on my watch. And when you do it with healthcare, you destroy the lives of millions of Americans. And that's exactly what he's in the process of doing right now, and it's disgusting. Okay. All right, let me take my final break now, and then when we come back, we got Fareed Zakaria. Did some commentary on the Trump administration that I want to talk about. Trump gave a speech to the Values Voters Summit, and then good googly moogly, do I have some fundamentalists for you. You do not want to miss the story of the fundamentalist fest that happened at the Values Voters Summit. Stay right there.
the left. I feel like I'm the left, a nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Please don't make me slap you with the left. The left. You will fake so I'm gonna slap you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the left, a nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Girl, at least protect me if this shit go left.
All right, we're back, everybody. Okay, let's go to an important story. This is important for weird reasons, as you'll find out. Fareed Zakaria did some commentary on the Trump administration, and he did something that I think is really interesting and important to highlight. So let's listen in here, and then we'll discuss.
When running against Donald Trump, Jeb Bush made a prediction about his highly unusual Republican rival. He said Trump was a chaos candidate and that he would become a chaos president. Bush fared badly in the primaries, but that prediction is proving remarkably accurate. In this last week, Donald Trump has thrown grenades into the American healthcare system and the Iranian nuclear deal, exploding the existing frameworks but with no clear replacement or strategy or solution. In the first months of Trump's presidency, what was most striking was the lack of any actual accomplishments. Various lists have been compiled of the things Trump promised to do on day one of his administration. Label China a currency manipulator, start repealing Obamacare, begin building the wall. He kept only a handful of his promises. Mostly he was talk and not much action. The world noticed. Last month, among the many insults that Trump volleyed toward North Korea, he sent one China's way. On September 3rd, he tweeted that the U.S. was considering stopping all trade with any country doing business with North Korea. This was obviously a dig at China and a massive threat to the global economic system. Were America to stop trading with China, it would be a seismic event, almost certainly producing a global recession. In the past, the Chinese have responded angrily to any such threats from Washington, always zealous about articulating and defending their national interests. This time, they responded by saying nothing. They didn't bother to reply. Beijing seems to have understood. It's Donald Trump. Don't take it too seriously. Trump has now signaled to countries like North Korea, never make a deal with America, because even if we sign, we might still upend the whole arrangement anyway. In his speech on Iran, Trump made the bizarre claim that other countries think in 100-year intervals. Even if this were true, which it isn't, Trump's actions suggest that his administration cannot even stay the course for a few years, let alone 100. Donald Trump's national security team, the so-called grown-ups, have signed on to this contradictory policy toward Iran, which is a sad sign, perhaps, that they value their jobs more than their reputations. Republicans used to pride themselves in being the party that was serious about foreign policy, committed to conservative values like order, continuity, and credibility. Instead, they have now as their leader an impetuous, mercurial showman who scorns any such stability. The result is just what Jeb Bush predicted: chaos.
So, I think Fareed Zakaria is a smart dude, but I think he seriously, seriously misreads the situation here. Because this is what many astute commentators worried about and warned about, the whole phenomenon of Trump. Rania Kolick mentioned this on Twitter. She said, probably the biggest problem with Trump is that he's now made it so that anything but Trump is defined as acceptable and reasonable, even. That's not true. That's nowhere near true. Trump is horrendous, but so are many of the people that you're now bolstering to try to put down Trump. So he leads the segment by saying Jeb was right. Jeb was right? The fuck are you talking about? And then towards the end there, you heard him say again that Jeb was right. But the part that really annoys me the most is where he says Republicans were the, quote, party that was serious on foreign policy. The party that was serious on foreign policy. See, this is the problem, Fareed, is that's not the case, and that was never the case. But you're now saying that to disparage Trump. to say, well, before Trump, I mean, come on, everything was just going fine in the Republican Party, and they were serious. They were serious. Do you not remember George W. Bush invading a country that didn't attack us based on lies? Do you not remember that? Do you not remember the hundreds of thousands of deaths that resulted because of that? Do you not remember ISIS rising out of the ruins of Iraq? Do you not remember the war in Afghanistan and how that became, we're going to get Al-Qaeda, and then that became, no, let's actually just stay there and fight the Taliban too. Do you not remember any of this? They're serious on foreign policy. That's not true. Jeb just said during the campaign, oh, yeah, no, with the war in Iraq, yeah, I probably would have done it too. And you're going to call Jeb right, and you're going to say Jeb is serious. Here's the reality, Fareed, and this is the problem with mainstream media, is oftentimes they fetishize tone. So it's how you say it, not what you're saying, it's how you say it. So in other words, Jeb Bush also said he wants to blow up the Iran deal. Virtually every Republican on stage said they want to blow up the Iran deal during the campaign. Jeb Bush and every other Republican on stage was in favor of a more hawkish policy against North Korea and a more hawkish policy in general because they're Republicans and that's what they do because they're not serious on foreign policy. They're gunslingers. Hey, let's fight everywhere and everything and let's pretend like we're doing it because we care about human rights as we bolster Saudi Arabia. So Trump comes along and he does all the things the neocons want, all the things the Republican foreign policy establishment wants. But Fareed Zakaria does commentary about how Trump is an aberration, and he's the worst. But the Republican foreign policy is, quote, the Republican foreign policy establishment is serious, quote, serious on foreign policy. No, Fareed, Trump is Jeb Bush, but he's Jeb Bush plus mean tweets. Jeb would have blown up the Iran deal, you know, or at least he said he wanted to. Jeb would have escalated with North Korea. At least he said he wanted to. So stop. Stop with this nonsense. The problem was the Republican elite. The Republican establishment is the problem. Not the average Joe voter, but the establishment. All those guys, you know, Bill Kristol, Paul Wolfowitz, all the neocons, the deep state, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, all those clowns on stage, they were all hawkish. But as those other guys started offensive wars and escalated tensions around the world and gave Saudi Arabia a big wet blowjob, as they did those things, they would have done it with a smile on their face and with some bullshit flowery rhetoric about how we care about human rights. Trump doesn't do that second part. Trump is just fucking flailing all over the place and tweeting threats on Twitter. And he's unstable. And let me be clear about something. This is not me excusing the actions of Trump, no. But my point is, you should be massively, massively against what Trump is doing because he is the neocon foreign policy establishment bitch boy. You should be massively against what Trump is doing, but you also don't need to bolster the credibility of the other heinous, cretinous Republicans in the process because they are heinous and they are cretinous. They just can mask it a little better than the guy we have in office now. But of course, Fareed Zakaria misses the ball completely, and he acts like, well, the other guys are, quote, serious on foreign policy, and Trump is the aberration who's terrible. No, the entire foreign policy establishment in the Republican Party, and almost the entire Democratic Party, they're the problem. Okay. All right, now, what everybody's been waiting for, the gathering of fucking psychopaths. President Trump gave a speech at the Values Voters Summit, which is a gathering of fundamentalist right-wingers. I have some clips here of that. This is from Time. Check it out.
In America, we don't worship government, we worship God. The American founders invoked our Creator four times in the Declaration of Independence. Four times. times have changed, but you know what? Now they're changing back again. Just remember that. We are stopping cold the attacks on Judeo-Christian values. You know, we're getting near that beautiful Christmas season that people don't talk about anymore. They don't use the word Christmas because it's not politically correct. You go to department stores and they'll say Happy New Year and they'll say other things and it'll be red, they'll have it painted, but they don't say, well, guess what? We're saying Merry Christmas again.
How embarrassing must it be to be in that group of people and to buy into this mythology? The idea that there's a war on Christmas. About 70% of the American public describes themselves as Christian. About 90% of the American public celebrates Christmas. Even people who aren't Christians celebrate Christmas. And you're going to tell me there's a war on Christmas? You can't walk 4 feet during Christmas season without seeing some fucking, you know, Rudolph the decorations or little elf decorations or Christmas lights or what have you. You can't go into any store in America without Christmas music playing. So, you know, the suggestion, which is not nearly as widespread as they make it seem, but the suggestion that, hey, maybe in some places where there's a diversity of people, if you say Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas, the suggestion that this is like some sort of oppression, some sort of, you know, crime against humanity, why? How? How is that a crime against humanity? And how is that a war on Christmas? When Christmas overwhelmingly dominates in that season, how is there a war on Christmas? Wouldn't the reality be Christmas waging a war on everything else? Because that's what it seems like to me. So, he really believes, he said, people don't talk about it anymore, talk about Christmas. People don't shut the fuck up about it. Christmas stations on the radio, regular stations, play Christmas music like for a month straight. What the fuck are you talking about? And listen, I'm not being curmudgeonly about it. Ma, you got to get rid of it. I'm just saying that what they're pointing out is objectively false. That there's some sort of war on Christmas and, oh my God, can you believe what's going on here? But now he acts like he's some sort of hero. Like, well, now we say it. Now we say it again. Oh, you fucking, what a strong fighter for the people. Anyway, how are those tax cuts going for Wall Street and the deregulation going? How's that going? Is that going good? How is that executive order going about now you letting coal companies pollute the waterways? Is that going well? But at least we can say Merry Christmas as we drink our toxic sludge water. Tremendous, believe me. Believe me. I took your health care away, but you can say Merry Christmas when you go to the hospital for surgery that's going to bankrupt you. Tremendous. And then I like the God is invoked in our Declaration of Independence over 4 times. Well, how many times is it mentioned in the Constitution? I can't hear you. I can't hear you over your wrongness. It's mentioned 0 times in the Constitution. So the thing that's actual law, the Constitution, it's not mentioned. And the only time they reference anything similar is when they say you can't establish a religion. So there's a separation of church and state. So it's the opposite of what you're leading on. But again, he's in a room full of fundamentalist Christians, so he's playing to the fundamentalist Christians. So now all of a sudden, God, 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 God. That's the art. God, 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 God. That's the God song that he's singing to all these people. And just, you know, these guys, God, they flip on a dime so fast when you go, oh, really? That's what you want to do. You want God everywhere. That's what you want? There are 8,000 speakers at this event that, you know, that want God, that want the Bible taught in schools. The fucking governor of Kentucky made that the case. Well, okay, you want to play that game? Sure. We also should teach the Quran in schools. You want to talk about God in our laws? Okay. Allah in our laws. They will flip like that. What? No, 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 no. Can't have that. I mean, it was secularism, right? It's a separation of church and state, mosque and state. Yes, for both of you. For Christians and for Muslims and for any religion. He's such a fucking con man, but enough people fell for it. In the words of somebody, said. Okay. Now, that was just the appetizer. Here's the main course. Right Wing Watch snuck into the Values Voters Summit. It's a gathering of far-right fundamentalists. And boy, did they get some creepy video from the speeches.
A lot of people think that what I stand for is religious. They ask me, well, what's all this talk about God? Don't you know God's not acceptable in this system of political arena? Well, I'm going to tell you, when you forget God, you can forget politics. When you forget God, you forget, just like it says, your heritage, your rights, your freedoms. For me, it's a question of freedom or slavery. This is an awful moment for our country. Should I keep back my opinions at such a time as this, I would consider myself guilty of treason toward my country and an act of disloyalty toward the majesty of heaven, which I revere above all earthly kings. We've got to go back to God. We've got to go back to the Constitution.
And you know, my friends, the attack isn't just on the football field. It's we're also seeing the left now turn into an American Taliban declaring war on our monuments. I don't know if you remember this, but it didn't start with Southern memorials. It started with the Ten Commandments. Last couple of decades, we've seen left-wing groups file lawsuits all over America forcing the Ten Commandments, plaques, and monuments to be taken down from courthouses and schools and state after state after state.
Salvation is free. It is a way to come back to God. We do nothing for it. In fact, it is wrong theology you hold. If you think that at the end of your life, that life is made up of a pan balance, and if you did more good things than bad things, that somehow that will get you into heaven, I'm sorry to say you'll be tragically mistaken on that final day. There's only one, and that is receiving and believing that it is God who saved your sins and that He is who He says He is. You know, the remarkable thing, when you read the Bible, every archaeology find that's ever come forward has only proved the authenticity of the Bible. People who do not receive this free gift, there will be a place called hell, and hell lasts just as long as heaven. And so it is my prayer and my wish, as I think it is many of yours, that every person in this room would make a decision today about where they will be for all of eternity, whether it be heaven or whether it be hell.
You know, you could be forgiven for thinking that was a religious gathering solely. It wasn't. It was a political gathering. Roy Moore, the guy who spoke at the beginning, he just got the nomination to be the Republican candidate in the Alabama election for senator to fill Jeff Sessions' old seat. Michelle Bachmann was a congresswoman, of course. There are some people in the middle there who were leading evangelical activists who have a line directly to Trump, who Trump has taken meetings with and spoken to. Look at the things they're saying and understand that there are people who really believe this stuff and they have influence and they have power. So you have Roy Moore who says, when you forget God, you forget politics, you forget rights, you forget freedom. I warned you guys that this guy is a theocrat, 100%. He would rather have the Ten Commandments be the Bill of Rights than the Bill of Rights be the Bill of Rights. 100%. Every part of his story, every story from his history proves that. I mean, this is a guy who lost his seat on the Supreme Court in Alabama because he refused to comply with a federal order to take down the Ten Commandments from his courthouse. You can't have that because this is a secular nation. You can't have theocratic law sitting in the front lawn of the fucking courthouse. That's Christian Sharia, and he lost his job because he stood up for Christian Sharia. And look at the contradiction there. When you forget God, you forget your rights and your freedom. No, quite the opposite. You have to forget God to embrace your rights and your freedom. Why? Because if you embrace God in our politics, that's theocracy, and that's fundamentally against rights and freedom. Because then you only have the right and the freedom to do what God wants you to do in the fucking holy books. When you get rid of the holy books, then you have actual freedom. Then you can do what you want. But when you have holy books as rule of law, that's the opposite of rights and freedom. They mix everything, man. And that's why he goes on to say, we need to go back to God and the Constitution. That makes no sense. We need to go back to God and the Constitution. That's like saying we need to go back to the Constitution and the opposite of the Constitution. That's a contradiction. Because the founders were clear, we have a separation of church and state. There is no establishment of religion in the United States of America. And he says this is a question of freedom or slavery. What does that even mean? Freedom or slavery? What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. I mean, if you want to be serious about it, these are people who are flat-out Confederate apologists. So, yeah, you would be the side of slavery, if anything. you're the side of draconian policies and rolling back the clock. And then you have, I think his name is Gary Bauer there, and he says, the left is the American Taliban. The projection in that comment is just dripping from every fucking pore of his body. The left is the American Taliban, as you're at an event where there are speakers, countless speakers, who are calling for religious law. The left is the American Taliban. Why? Because we wanted to take down statues of Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general who led traitors to this nation. Robert E. Lee himself, when they lost, said, yeah, don't put up statues to me. So the people who are more pro-American are somehow anti-American and are the American Taliban. No, you're the American Taliban because you believe in enforcing your religion on everybody else. And then, of course, the best for last is Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann said, archaeology proves the Bible is true. You know, archaeologists disagree. What the fuck is wrong with these people, man? In the Bible, there are stories of, you know, obviously Jesus walking on water, but you have countless stories, allusions to the earth being flat. There's four parts of the Bible where they allude to the fact that the earth is flat. People sailing to the four corners of the earth, for example. There's a seven-headed dragon in the Bible. In the Bible, they say, in the Old Testament, they say it's an abomination to wear a mix of two different fabrics. I mean, you can't eat shellfish. The list goes on and on of the ridiculous rules and the preposterous claims in the Bible. And Michelle Bachmann, hook, line, and sinker, falls for it and says, yes, archaeology proves the Bible. And then she argues that hell is real. You know, these people, I feel bad for them because of how wrong they are and how much they're either too stupid to get it or they're clinging to their mythology like a baby clings to its blanket. So I feel bad for them on the one hand. But then on the other hand, it's just abundantly clear, you need to get the fuck out of politics. Because this isn't for you. This is for adults dealing with adult issues, trying to fix real problems. You know, you're out there telling the equivalent of Harry Potter stories. You're out there telling The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe to each other and saying perhaps we should govern by it. And then there are serious people trying to deal with serious problems. So I feel bad for you and I hope you get help. But you shouldn't be controlling public policy because you're simply not on the level. You don't have the cognitive abilities to do so. You are beyond primitive and draconian in your thinking. And what's hilarious is they lash out against the left in the most broad, disgusting, incorrect terms as they advocate for governing our country based on the rules of Pokemon, based on the rules of mythical nonsense, the Lord of the Rings. Thank you, but you can keep your goddamn fairy tales out of the public arena, and we should govern based on logic and science and reason and empathy and a shared sense of community. None of the nonsense that you spew. Okay. Mike over at the Humanist Report mentioned something that caught my eye. According to Popular Resistance, listen to this. We just learned that the FCC will not vote on taking net neutrality away in October, which means it will likely be on the agenda in November or December. This is the time of year when folks in Washington, D.C. do their dirty work because they think everyone is full of turkey or busy consuming for the holidays. Wow. What a fucking sick trick that is. So do you understand what's happening here? They were supposed to vote on this in October. And now they're pushing it off, and they're pushing it off to get less press for when they do it. Because they broke a record in the comments period for net neutrality. I think they got over 9 million comments, and almost all of them were against this garbage that the FCC is trying to do, which is to gut net neutrality. And in fact, there was a story that we covered about how the comments that agreed with the FCC were fake. Many of them were fake because they were repeated, like the word for word. So they had to try to beef up the stats for the side for the thing that they're about to fucking do, where everybody else was like, go fuck yourself, don't gut net neutrality. And what you're going to have here is a fractionalizing of the internet if/when they do this. And that makes it so that, you know, some of the websites that you love the most might get their speed slowed down through your internet service provider because your internet service provider demanded a bribe from them to keep their speed up, and they refused to give it. So you're going to have an internet where, you know, you might be able to access one site you like, but not another site you like, where right now it's equal everywhere. Everywhere you go, same speed on the internet. So the rules that Obama's FCC put in place said, no, we're going to regulate the internet like a public utility, and we're guaranteeing equal access to all the sites. Ajit Pai's coming in, and he's doing the bidding of the internet service providers because he's their little bitch boy, and he's making it so that they get to determine access, and they get to slow down speed to whatever websites they want to, and what that means is they'll demand a bribe from all the websites, and if the websites don't pay it, well, then you're going to get your access slowed down. By the way, this also crushes small business because, you know, they can't afford to pay whatever the price is going to be to get their internet speed up. So you're just going to have giant multinational corporations are the only ones that are probably able to afford the bribes, and they're the only ones that will have their speed up, and so that crushes small business, crushes competition. It's inherently anti-capitalist. So these guys are corporatists. Ajit Pai is a corporatist. That's what he is. And he's doing the bidding of the corporations at the expense of everybody else in the country and at the expense of you enjoying your fucking internet experience. So that's why the comments section broke records, is because people are so sick of his bullshit. And now we know they're trying to be even sneakier. They're trying to make it so that you don't even realize it when they do it. What? No, it's the holidays. What? Oh, you're sitting around with your family eating some turkey. Relax, man. It's all good. Anyway, we just fucked up the internet for the future, so it's cool. By the way, the whole Republican Party is in cahoots on this issue, and they're all dead wrong. So another thing they did, and we discussed this at length, is I think it was a bill that only 7% of Americans agreed with, but Republicans signed on to a piece of legislation that takes away your internet privacy protections. So in other words, now when you go to a website and they collect data on you, they're allowed to take that information, that company, and sell it to other third parties. That used to not be the case. You just have to get your permission before somebody who took your information on the internet could then give it to other people. They used to have to ask for your permission. Now they don't. The Republicans all voted for your internet privacy rights going away. The Democrats all voted for you continuing to have your internet privacy rights. Pirate party. This is a pirate party. There's no doubt about it. Okay. And with that being said, we are out of time. All right, guys, I love all of you. And we'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day. Much love. Peace.